Listener advisory. The following show has adult language and adult themes concerning human sexuality. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. Today, a frank critique of that icon of the 50s, the late Hugh M. Hefner. There's some criticism, for sure, but some appreciation, too. I hope you'll stay tuned. Hugh Hefner, creator of Playboy magazine, died last month, September 2017. I can't imagine who would replace him. I can't imagine what a 21st century replacement would even look like. And I'm not sure that he ought to be replaced. Still, Hefner was an important person in American cultural history, and I think we should remember that he did some very real good in the world. So, much of our show this week will be about Hef. A measure of his cultural importance is the long article the New York Times published at his death. The online version runs no less than 2,600 words, plus several photographs. I'm going to read my much-condensed version of that Times piece. Then, following a song by Tom Lehrer, I'd like to talk about my own thoughts and experiences with Hefner and his Playboy magazine. With Hefner, there's a lot to criticize, but there's a good deal to praise, too. Let's start with the excellent New York Times story. It's titled, Hugh Hefner, Who Built the Playboy Empire and Embodied It, Dies at 91, by Laura Manzneros. Condensed and edited for radio by yours truly. Here we go. Hugh Hefner, who created Playboy magazine and spun it into a media and entertainment industry giant, died September 27 at his home, the Playboy Mansion, in Los Angeles. He was 91. The man and Playboy the brand were inseparable. Both advertised themselves as emblems of the sexual revolution, an escape from American priggishness and wider social intolerance. Both were derided over the years, as vulgar, as adolescent, as exploitative, and finally as anachronistic. But Mr. Hefner was a stunning success from the moment he emerged in the 1950s. The first issue of Playboy was published in 1953, when Hefner was 27, a new father, married, he said, to the first woman he had slept with. He had only recently moved out of his parents' house, but in an editorial in Playboy's inaugural issue, the young publisher purveyed another life. Quote, "We enjoy mixing up cocktails and an hors d'oeuvre or two, putting a little mood music on the phonograph, and inviting a female acquaintance for a quiet discussion on Picasso, Nietzsche, jazz, sex." Unquote. Todd Gitlin, a sociologist at Columbia University, said, "It's part of an ensemble with the James Bond movies, John F. Kennedy, swinging, the guy who is young, vigorous, indifferent to the bonds of social responsibility." Unquote. Continuing with Laura Manzneros's article, Hugh Marston Hefner was born on April 9, 1926, the son of Nebraska Methodists who had moved to Chicago. Hefner told interviewers that he had grown up with a lot of repression, quote-unquote. The first issue of Playboy was financed with $600 of his own money and several thousand more in borrowed funds, including $1,000 borrowed from his mother. His biggest asset was rights to a nude calendar photograph of Marilyn Monroe. This first issue was published in December 1953. The magazine was a hit, and circulation soared. Many other men's magazines showed nude women, but most were crude and forever dodging postal censors. With Playboy, Hefner aimed to be the first with a mainstream readership. In the 1950s, when Hefner began denouncing American Puritanism, doctors were refusing contraceptives to single women, and Hollywood insisted on separate beds for married couples. The Playboy Philosophy, quote unquote, was a long-running series of essays in the magazine. Hefner wrote it in 25 installments, starting in 1962. These essays were a mix of libertarian and libertine arguments. The Playboy Philosophy crusaded for abortion rights, decriminalization of marijuana, freedom of speech, and the repeal of 19th-century anti-sex laws. These were daring positions at the time. For this, Mr. Hefner won several civil liberties awards. He supported progressive social causes, including civil rights, at a time when much of the nation still had Jim Crow laws. In the 1950s, Mr. Hefner was reviled by guardians of the social order, including J. Edgar Hoover. Later, he was reviled by feminists. Playboy's circulation reached 1 million by 1960 and peaked at about 7 million in the 1970s. Hefner won, sociologist Todd Gitlin said. Continuing the quote, "The prevailing values in the country now are essentially libertarian, and that basically was what the Playboy philosophy was. It's laissez-faire. It's anti-censorship. It's consumerist. It's hedonistic. In the longer run, Hugh Hefner's significance is as a salesman of the libertarian ideal," unquote, quoting sociologist Todd Gitlin. Playboy magazine was a forum for serious interviews. The subjects included Jimmy Carter, Bertrand Russell, Jean-Paul Sartre, and Malcolm X. Playboy published fiction by Ray Bradbury, including Fahrenheit 451, also by Herbert Gold, Bud Schulberg, Vladimir Nabokov, Kurt Vonnegut, Saul Bellow, Bernard Malamud, James Baldwin, John Updike, and Joyce Carol Oates. Sidebar comment, you'll recognize these as very important names in American literature in the 20th century. Back to the text. Eventually, other publications made the nude Playmate centerfold look less than daring. Still, Playboy remained the most successful men's magazine in the world. Mr. Hefner's company branched into movie, cable, and digital production, sold its own line of clothing and jewelry, and opened clubs, resorts, and casinos. In 1974, Hefner moved himself and his business empire from Chicago to Los Angeles. The brand faded over the years. The 1980s brought a huge retrenchment. The company sold its resorts and its record division, sold We magazine, sold the Playboy building in Chicago, and sold the corporate jet with its built-in discotheque. Bunnies were going the way of go-go dancers, and the Playboy clubs closed. The magazine's circulation declined to less than a million. In 2015, Playboy magazine made the startling decision to stop publishing nude photographs. But 2 years later, in 2017, the nudes returned. And thus ends my much condensed version of the New York Times excellent obituary, published on the day of Hefner's death, September 27, 2017. Playboy was founded in an age when the law courts were beginning to strike down the country's many repressive laws regulating sexuality, contraception, erotic literature, and so forth. Hugh Hefner both campaigned for and benefited from these legal advances in civil liberties. Not everyone was as pleased as Hefner with the direction things were going. Among the dissenters was the satirist Tom Lehrer. Here he is in 1965.
I do have a cause, though. It is obscenity. I'm for it. Thank you. Unfortunately, the civil liberties types who are fighting this issue have to fight it, owing to the nature of the laws, as a matter of freedom of speech and stifling of free expression and so on. But we know what's really involved. Dirty books are fun. That's all there is to it. But you can't get up in the court and say that, I suppose. It's simply a matter of freedom of pleasure, a right which is not guaranteed by the Constitution, unfortunately. Anyway, since people seem to be marching for their causes these days, I have here a march for mine. It's called Smut. Give me smut and nothing but a dirty novel I can't shut if it's uncut and unsut. Tall. Quibbled. If it was ribbled, I would devour where others merely nibbled. As the judge remarked the day that he acquitted my Aunt Hortense, to be smut it must be utterly without redeeming social importance. Pornographic pictures I adore, indecent magazines galore, I like them more if they're hardcore. On the obscene movies, murals, postcards, neckties, samplers, stained glass windows, tattoos, anything. More, more, I'm still not satisfied. Stories of tortures used by debauchers, lurid, licentious, and vile, make me smile. Novels that pander to my taste for candor give me a pleasure sublime. Let's face it, I love slime. All books can be indecent books, though recent books are bolder. For filth, I'm glad to say, is in the mind of the beholder. When correctly viewed, everything is lewd. I could tell you things about Peter Pan and the Wizard of Oz. There's a dirty old man. Fanny Hill, and I suppose I always will, if it is swill and really filthy. Who needs a hobby like tennis or philately? I've got a hobby, rereading Lady Chatterley. But now they're trying to take it all away from us unless we take a stand, and hand in hand we fight for freedom of the press. In other words, smut, I love it. Ah, the adventures of a slut. Oh, I'm a market they can't glut. I don't know what compares with smut. Hip, hip, hooray, let's hear it for the Supreme Court. Don't let them take it away.
Tom Lehrer, who can't seem to decide if he's for or against the new freedom of expression. Which brings us back to Hugh Hefner and Playboy. I'd like to talk about my own personal experiences with the magazine and my own very mixed attitudes towards it. A warning to listeners, this segment contains a great deal of adult language and adult themes concerning sex. Listener discretion is advised. In 2015, Donald Fagen of Steely Dan published a fine essay on the great radio storyteller Gene Shepherd. Fagen showed how Shepherd, like the old Mad magazine, contributed much to Fagen's adolescent development and maturation. But, like Mad magazine, Shepherd proved unable to contribute much to Fagen's development after adolescence. I think that's a brilliant take on Gene Shepherd and Mad magazine both. I feel the same about Mad, and I feel the same about that other crucial publication of the 1950s and 60s, Hugh Hefner's Playboy magazine. At age 16, 17, I bought Playboy each month at the corner store, devoured them, and hid them from my parents. I studied the pictures, but I also read the articles and columns with great interest. I especially looked forward to the Playboy philosophy, which was nearing the end of its run by 1967. I thought it a fine defense of civil liberties and a fine attack on civic hypocrisy and repressive laws. And I still think so. I gained even more from a regular column called The Playboy Advisor. The column was anonymous. Later, I read that the writer was named D. Keith Mono. From Mono's clear, correct answers to readers' questions, I learned much more about sex than I ever learned from sex education class in high school. From the Playboy Advisor, I learned much about female anatomy and the physiology of female sexual response. Specifically, what would be good to do and what not to do to contribute to a woman's sexual pleasure. Yes, female sexual pleasure was an important concern to the so-called Playboy lifestyle. So was the ability to mix a good martini, but never mind that. High school sex education class never mentioned multiple female orgasms, for example, let alone the best ways to help bring them about. Come to think of it, sex ed class never mentioned female orgasm at all. The goal of sex education class was to prolong everybody's virginity through fear. My first sexual intercourse was with a young woman a year older than me and more experienced. I can report that everything went extremely well for both of us. We both found it a wonderful experience. No thanks to Mom and Dad, no thanks to my peers, and especially no thanks to 11th grade sex education class. I owe those wonderful early experiences mostly to D. Keith Mono, the Playboy Advisor, and publisher Hugh Hefner. I have been deeply grateful for 50 years, and I remain so. And yet, Playboy was indeed a force for progressivism and human liberation in the 1950s and 60s. But its vision did not continue to develop along with my own. The magazine's unquestioning celebration of consumer culture and of expensive consumer products never wavered. As I developed, the magazine's gung-ho celebration of the latest expensive consumer products started seeming quaint, and at last distasteful. Feminists have long charged that Playboy presents women as just another consumer product, just fashion accessories to purchase along with your sports car and stereo system. I think they're right. And that's not just a social faux pas on Hefner's part. It's also connected to the odd thing about Playboy's nude photos. In the photos, the women seem pretty, but they don't seem sexy. They're like art nudes, except it's not very good art. The photography is too slick. The makeup and hairstyling are too professionally applied. The studio lighting is too impeccably perfect. The pose, the expression on the lady's face are practiced. There is nothing overtly sexual depicted, or even anything suggestive. The effect is not art, and it's not sexy either. It is commercial illustration. It is first-rate industrial photography. So, it's not much of a turn-on. Then there's the style of the ladies themselves. In the early years of Playboy magazine, much of the erotic charge was that the naked ladies seem fairly close to being the girl next door. Not exactly the girl next door, maybe the girl next door's beautiful cousin. But the so-called playmate was much more like the girl next door than the hard, painted ladies in the other men's magazines. Any man will tell you that the girl next door taking off her clothes is much more erotic than a Las Vegas stripper taking off her clothes. So Playboy magazine got that right at first. But over the years, the nude playmates seemed to be fewer and fewer real people from Chicago, and more aspiring TV actresses from Los Angeles. And they looked it. Okay if you like the style, but not my type. The hippie counterculture offered a different, simpler, and much more natural standard of female beauty. My own tastes drifted that a ways, and have never drifted back. Meanwhile, Playboy's tastes were drifting more towards 22-year-olds at Pomona State College pursuing a career in acting and modeling, according to the Capsule Playmate biographies. And then there are those breasts. Hugh Hefner did the world a great disservice with all those oversized breasts. From Playboy, and also its competitors, one got the impression that the average American young woman would have found a C-cup bra a tight fit. Consequently, in the 1960s, the large majority of American women were convinced that their breasts were much smaller than average. They were also convinced that having breasts that were smaller than average was a big problem that demanded their immediate attention. Ladies with a drawer full of B-cup bras considered themselves flat-chested, and those with A-cups were despondent. Padded bras were ubiquitous. Here's a memory from either high school or possibly my first year in college. A girl's phys ed class is outside doing some kind of calisthenic exercise directed by the teacher. The girls are jumping and moving their shoulders back and forth while chanting a cadence together. The words of the cadence are these: "We must, we must, we must increase the bust." Over and over and over again. After a half century, I've never forgotten that sight. Hugh Hefner is far from the only culprit in fostering that widespread feeling of bust inadequacy, but he was a major culprit. I'm sure there were plenty of beautiful, small-busted women in Chicago and L.A. in the 1960s, not to mention beautiful women of average bust size. Somehow, Playboy magazine never managed to find any. The force that did Playboy magazine in was the flood of free porn on the internet. That flood of free porn, especially the free amateur porn, did some good things. For one, it revealed both the variety and the statistical norms of female body types. Today, you can find naked pictures of 14 million girlfriends, wives, ex-wives, ex-girlfriends, and selves. Naked selfies are all the rage among teenagers and girls in their 20s. These are all over the internet, too, at least for girls over 18. Look at the naked pictures of 1,000 women of normal weight, and then tell me what the average bust size is. Then look at a dozen playmates. Somebody's a standard deviation or two above the mean, and it's not the 1,000 amateur wives and girlfriends. But back to the internet porn. It is hard to judge a person's feelings by her photograph, but in the faces of these lithe young women on the internet, these young women for whom a bra is optional, in their faces I don't see any hint of bad feelings about the shape of their bodies. Certainly not among the women taking naked selfies. Their faces and their body language seem to say, "I'm pretty and I'm sexy and I know it." Their sense of discretion may be lacking, but I do admire the look of self-acceptance. compares favorably with girls back in my day doing pectoral exercises while chanting, "We must increase the bust." Those may be the first good words you've heard about internet porn, but there you have it. For increasing everyone's appreciation of the beauty of real, ordinary women, including women who wear A-cup bras, the score is Internet Porn 1, Playboy Magazine 0. But Playboy Magazine is dying, and Hugh Hefner is dead. Both are icons of an earlier era, an age that was different from our own. Hugh Hefner helped make our own age what it is, in some bad ways, but also, for sure, in some good ways as well. He was a champion of civil liberties. Civil liberties not only of sex, but also of free speech and freedom of expression, and abortion rights, as the Times obituary mentioned. The part Hefner played in the civil rights struggle was small, but it was real and it was positive. Think of the progressive achievements of our time. Gay rights, gay marriage, transgender rights, the right of all people to buy and use contraceptives, the right to have sex with a partner of your choice without risking arrest. I think Hugh Hefner contributed very substantially to all of these gains. His contribution to women's liberation was much less. But perhaps those civil liberties gains have helped women more than all those silly bunnies and D-cup playmates have hurt them. That's not for me to say. But I will say this. I think he did more good in the world than harm. And I'd be delighted if, years down the road, anybody could say the same about me. Rest in peace, Hugh Marston Hefner, died September 27, 2017. To you, too, I say goodbye, though hopefully not forever. Tune in anytime at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening, reminding illegitimi non-carborundum, and hoping you'll tune in again next week. Let us end with some Latin almost as bad as illegitimi non carborundum. By the doorbell of the old Playboy Mansion in Chicago was a plaque inscribed in Latin, "Si non osculas, noli tintinare." If you don't swing, don't ring. Ciao.